BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, did you know that the biblical values that you and I hold dear are being undermined? More than just being undermined, they are actually being attacked and facing direct assaults by organizations which purport to be backed by sound science and sound educational principles. Yet those in whom we have placed our trust as a nation are working feverishly to destroy Christian values and are influencing this generation in a way that is, well, it's negatively impacting the minds of young children, teens, and adults. It's an indoctrination taking aim at biblical truth and sexualizing our nation. We're speaking of the American Psychological Association and the National Education Association. Joining us today, we'd like to welcome Lori Higgins. Lori is a cultural affairs writer with the Illinois Family Institute. Lori, thank you for being with us today.
Hi, Jim. Thanks so much for having me.
I'd like to begin with the APA, the American Psychological Association. You have brought to light a division of the APA known as Division 44. Sounds kind of mysterious. What is Division 44?
Yes, and actually I was surprised how long ago it formed. It formed in 1985, and the title is the Society for the Psychology of Sexual Orientation and Gender Diversity. And one might think from that title that they would be examining these issues, but no, this was started by a group of LGB psychologists and their allies to promote and deliver affirmative psychological services to homosexual and transgender community. So this is not an organization that is dedicated to researching this topic. It's dedicated to promoting a set of assumptions about what I would call deviant sexuality.
Now, give us again the year that this was formed.
The Division 44 was formed in 1985, but just in this last year, that Division 44 established a committee that's called the Task Force on Consensual Non-Monogamy. That's why it's made the press. And for those who don't know what non-monogamy is, I mean, it's kind of self-evident, but another term you'll hear often in the culture is polyamory, which is the sexual and romantic involvement with multiple people at the same time of various sexes.
Now, it's interesting, 1985, so we're talking this whole sexualizing of the nation as it comes through the APA. This has been underway for some time.
It has. Well, it goes back farther than that because it really goes back to 1973 when there was a political assault at an APA convention to take out homosexuality from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, and it was a political event. Mm-hmm. It wasn't based on science or even the social sciences, which I call pseudosciences. It was a political action, and then it's just continued since then, which is why my argument and the argument of many others is we should have the APA should no longer have any credibility because it's a political activist organization.
But the problem is they do have credibility amongst the medical profession, amongst the educational profession. I mean, there are many who quote the APA and they'll say, well, see, the APA has made this decision, therefore we need to make, you know, change here.
Well, exactly. I mean, one of the things that I talk about in my article is that as our culture has moved away from religion, and I would say in particular Christianity, what fills now the gap as the arbiter of morality is not faith, it is pseudosciences, the social sciences, which are woefully unstable. You know, they cite studies that they can't later replicate, and they find out that they have confirmation bias and all sorts of problems with it, but yet the results continue to be touted. And so, yeah, we do look, the culture does look to the APA, and there's an interesting thing about that, and it's the same thing that happened with the American Academy of Pediatrics, because they came out, well, 2 years in a row, and affirming what they call trans-affirmative protocol for children. And so I looked into, well, who is it that comes up with these policies? And I found out with the AAP, which is composed of about 66,000 members, 55 people created and voted on that policy. It's never sent out to the entirety of the AAP. Hmm. And the similar things are going on here because you now have this new task force, and I identified all the people that are listed as advisor on the advisory board for this task force. If people go to my article online, they can read about each one of them. They're all people who affirm, for example, BDSM, bondage, discipline, sadomasochism, and all sorts of other deviant sexualities. That's who serves on the advisory committee. It's not ideologically balanced or neutral. In fact, I encourage people to go to it. There's one in particular. Well, I don't even know if I should say. They should go and look on Richard Sprott, what the kind of workshops he offers at the BDSM conventions he speaks at. I don't even want to say it on the air. I don't even know if I could.
And that's what, you know, part of this is all about. This is so graphic and so detailed, and yet we see, you know, educational groups and medical groups that are quoting from them and saying, yes, this is what we need to affirm. The APA has put their stamp of approval on it, and so they treat it as being gospel. Matter of fact, one of the things you've warned about here is that they equate this consensual non-monogamy, like adultery or polyamory, as just another sexual orientation. And don't we see that sprinkled all throughout our laws today here across this land?
Exactly. The people who are on this task force view it as a sexual orientation. They have a petition to have it included as a protected class. And this is why conservatives have long argued we should not include sexual orientation in anti-discrimination policies or laws. The reason is not that we want people bullied or harassed or treated badly. The reason is that sexual orientation will come to include other things, other forms of deviant sexuality, including what are called the paraphilias. And so now we're seeing that come home to roost. Once you establish this as a protected class, you will begin to see it in schools, high schools, middle schools, and down into the lower grades, because now we're introducing the trans ideology and homosexuality to kindergartners. And so this is the problem. I think conservatives and probably everybody, they too little look at the big picture and the implications of ideas. So, for example, with marriage, once we have it written in law that marriage has nothing to do with biological sex and nothing to do with reproductive potential, there's no way to restrict it to two people.
Mm-hmm.
And so the legalization of plural unions is going to be pushed by the polyamorists, and now we have it's not that it's might happen. It's that it's inevitable now that we will legalize plural unions.
Yeah, and I find it interesting because there's an article on LifeSite News talking about Teen Vogue. This is a publication directed at girls 13 years of age and older, but they recently had this article of a person declaring herself polyamorous, saying she's attracted to men and to women, would find fulfillment in a relationship with two other people. They're calling that arrangement a thruple.
Right. And there have been earlier articles about people who have actually legally married, I think it was in Canada, a thruple.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, we're going to see this. We're going to see it at the lower grades. It'll come in as, you know, under the rubric of family diversity. That's one of the ways that they'll get it in. And they specifically say in here that they want to destigmatize polyamory. To destigmatize means to eradicate cultural disapproval of something. And they actually describe it. This is their own description. They call it polyamory, open relationships, swinging, relationship anarchy. That's their description. And other types of ethical non-monogamous relationships. Of course, they don't define what kind of criteria they use in the definition of ethical, because most people, I would say, well, certainly all decent people would say it's intrinsically non-ethical to have multiple relationships at the same time.
And they're portraying polyamorous as being the victims in all of this.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the whole destigmatization, and they talk about it. They use the same tactics the homosexual community has used to advance their cause, which is to talk about how bad they feel when they hear disapproval of it. And the left uses that to suggest that the ethical legitimacy of speech, of the things that we say, is determined by the subjective response of the hearer. So if someone within earshot doesn't like your expression of your moral beliefs, then what you've said is wrong. And of course, that's absurd. And they don't adhere to that principle consistently. They don't say that if they express their beliefs and a Christian hears them, you know, that Christians are hateful and all this, they don't say that, well, therefore their speech is unethical. So it only goes in one direction.
Lori Higgins is our guest today, cultural affairs writer with the Illinois Family Institute. There was a Princeton University professor, Robert George, and back in 2015, he warned with this question, is polyamory next? And he wrote, if gender doesn't matter for marriage, they ask, then why should number matter? If love makes a family, as that slogan goes, why should, their marriage be denied legal recognition, the dignity and social standing come along with it? And that's, once we change the definition of marriage is what it is, its historic definition that has stood for all of time, then why should number matter in all of this?
Exactly. I was on, before same-sex marriage was legalized, well, by Obergefell, before that, Illinois legalized it, and I was on a radio program with the ACLU spokesperson in Illinois, in Chicago, and he kept saying, marriage is the union of two people who love each other. And I kept asking in the interview, I kept saying, why two people? And mm-hmm. he couldn't answer. And finally, I said to the host, I said, I would submit that he won't answer because he can't answer, because once you remove both biological sex and reproductive potential from the criteria determining what marriage is, there remains no reason to keep two people. Because conservatives understand why marriage is restricted to two people, because there are two sexes. And actually, the state, if marriage is just about love, there is no justification for the government being involved at all. The government isn't involved to affirm people's love. There's no vested interest in the state to do that. The state's interest is in protecting the needs and rights of children, because that affects the public good, and that's what the government is involved in, why it's involved with marriage.
And this APA Division 44, they've actually launched a petition drive building support for what they call this relationship diversity issues.
Right, exactly. And their petition drive is the one that specifically says that they want to include non-monogamy as a protected class. And this, there needs to be more discussion among conservatives about what classes should be protected. The left has made great headway in comparing, they started with homosexuality and comparing it to race, because it served a strategic purpose. But there are no similarities, there are no analogies or points of correspondence between homosexuality per se or polyamory per se and race, which is an objective biological condition with no behavioral implications whatsoever. There's literally no points of correspondence, but we don't challenge them on their analogy, and it continues to work.
The website, we're about ready to take a break, but let's get a website out where people can read this article and others that you've written as well.
Sure, illinoisfamily.org.
And folks, you go there, you'll find these articles by Lori Higgins, illinoisfamily.org. Well, we're going to learn how this APA initiative, even what we're seeing through Division 44, is now making its way into the educational system as well. And we're going to be seeing in the next segment what the NEA has just passed, resolutions that they have just passed and authorized new business items at their meeting held earlier this month. Back in just 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, evolutionists say that because our blood is similar to seawater, this proves the evolution of life in the ocean. Is this true?
Chris, it is true that evolution says that life evolved in the sea, but human blood is very different from seawater. Now, many of the same elements are in both, but the concentrations and compounds are very, very different. God used the building blocks he had created on day one to form all things. Human blood has unbearably complex molecules locked into complex combinations that are very different from anything ever found in seawater. In fact, seawater would break down the compounds that we have in our blood. Chris, we can be confident that man did not come from the sea. Man was created by the Creator, who also created the sea. We read all about it when we go back to Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America, and friends, I can't tell you how many people or articles or institutions we have heard from who have pointed back to the APA, the American Psychological Association, and saying, see, what they've changed, you know, they used to call homosexuality a mental illness, but they don't. It's normal now. It's normalization. And that's what has happened with the homosexuality. That's what's happening right now with the transgender movement and all the drag queen events that are taking place and drag shows and what's at story times at libraries and other entities getting involved with these, the normalizing of transgenderism. Folks, it is not normal. It violates nature itself. It violates biblical principles. And then now we also have the matter of making what's called consensual non-monogamy as being normalized as well. Well, the APA has put together this Division 44. It's been around since 1985, but sure is surfacing with these thoughts that are coming through. Matter of fact, Lori Higgins, our guest with the Illinois Family Institute, you have said that the APA is a tool for sexual deviancy advocacy. You're not being overdramatic there, are you?
No, not at all. And if people would, you know, go to the article online and read about the people who serve on the task force advisory board, they'll see that I'm not exaggerating. They're involved with and promoting all sorts of, I mean, what I'm going to use language from there is kinky romance novels, BDSM, coprophilia, which people can look up because I'm not going to discuss it here. Those are people who serve, and I would say, in what kind of world are those activities suggestive of psychological health? They're not, and let alone moral health.
Well, this APA initiative is making its way into schools. I was reading an article in the Daily Signal, and they're reporting of a California teacher starting to review their state's health lesson mandates. That's another whole topic in itself. But she discovered then this LGBT, this non-monogamy task force, and in doing so realized in teaching her to avoid terms like boyfriend and girlfriend because some students may be non-monogamous. And Lori, this is a lesson plan for 12-year-old children.
Right. And this brings up a really important aspect of public education's decision to advocate for sexual deviance and leftist views of that, which is they continually use the word appropriate, age appropriate. And no one, community members, don't ever ask them, what criteria do you use to establish age appropriateness? No one asks the questions. So they can, a teacher, and also people rely a lot on what they call, you know, curricula review committees, not realizing, and I worked in a public school for a decade before I came to Illinois Family Institute, teachers can read an article on the weekend in, you know, the New York Times and bring it in and discuss it with their students without ever running it by a department chair or a curricula review committee. So a teacher can read this in the APA. This teacher that you talked about, she was disturbed by this, but other people could read this and say, oh, this is a good thing to bring into class, and in an affirmative way. And so we don't know what's going on in our classrooms. That's the reality. And the APA is very influential. The NEA, which we're going to talk about, is very influential. The American Library Association, which also like affirms the drag queen story hours, that's very influential. So we've lost control of what our children are taught in classes.
Well, this really does segue to our next national organization, Undermining Biblical Values, the NEA, National Education Association. And, Lori, you've written that they have just held their annual representative assembly, Houston, Texas, happened earlier this month, nearly 7,000 delegates. And what they have passed in new business items is absolutely appalling. And before we share some of those, I think it's important if you have before you what this organization has as their code of ethics, which is seemingly going to violate the very things that they just passed.
Right. This is the irony. Yes, I have it in front of me. So this is from, there was other parts of the Code of Ethics, but here's one part. It says, the educator recognizes the supreme importance of the pursuit of truth, devotion to excellence, and the nurture of the democratic principles. Essential to these goals is the protection of freedom to learn. The educator, therefore, works to stimulate the spirit of inquiry, the acquisition of knowledge and understanding, and the thoughtful formulation of worthy goals. In fulfillment of the obligation to the student, the educator shall not unreasonably deny the student's access to varying points of view, end quote. What's interesting about this is I know from working in public schools, they do indeed deny students' access to varying points of view, particularly on matters related to sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Don't you dare say that there's two genders. Don't dare say there's male and female. You might find yourself in the principal's office or suspended.
Right. Because what they've done is they've redefined the word safety. Now they mean discomfort. When they say safety, they really mean discomfort. But they'll say safety, and they'll say if a student, even if they present multiple resources that affirm homosexuality, same-sex marriage, gender confusion as not gender confusion, if you say, how about one resource that challenges that and intellectually does, they will say, oh, no, students can't be exposed to that because it makes them feel unsafe. When I worked at the high school, it was on the North Shore of Chicago for a decade. I was in the English department, and they were teaching a really obscene play, Angels in America, very well known, that promotes homosexuality. One of the English teachers who was teaching it sent a letter to the local press saying, it's the job of English teachers to challenge the morals and emotions of students.
Really?
Yes. And I responded in print. He was a colleague of mine. And I said, is that really the job of English teachers? And if so, if it is, then why aren't the emotions and values and beliefs of liberal kids ever challenged by resources?
Wow. So true, and yet we are finding the stopping of the mouth, the taping over the mouths of students that would hold opposing viewpoints to the agenda items, basically, of the NEA, especially on sexuality items. I'd like to have us review some of these new business items that the NEA actually passed at their meetings that were held in early July here, 2019. And if this doesn't serve as an eye opener to people across this nation, I don't know what it's going to take, because these are so egregious as it relates to Christian values and biblical truth that it's a direct assault on the very things that parents are teaching their children.
Right. And one of the problems, I mean, I've had two people in the past couple of days since this came out contact me, liberal, and saying, this did not happen. I sent them the links to it, these new business items, because it's so extreme. It is just like you've taken the most radical parts of the Democratic platform and passed it as new business items for the NEA. So some of them are, the NEA opposes all attacks on the right to choose and stands on the fundamental right to abortion. It calls on the Trump administration, the Senate, and the House to end the detention of immigrant children and their families, including end to ICE raids. It calls on the U.S. government to accept responsibility for the destabilization of Central America. It's pushing for reparations for descendants of slaves. It wants, as a top legislative priority, to push the Equality Act,
okay,
which I know you've talked about.
We have, but Lori, what do any of these things have to do with education?
Exactly. Well, it gets even worse, because when you get to some of the sexuality stuff, they want to, here's one, they want to create model legislative language so state affiliates can lobby to have K-12 cross-content curriculum that is LGBTQ+ inclusive. In other words, they don't want to, it's bad enough that in kindergarten you might teach about homosexuality or gender confusion through anti-bullying programs or health or social and emotional learning. They want it in all content curriculum. And that what that would do, it would make it impossible for parents to opt their children out of such teaching, because it would be in every area.
Every area. It doesn't matter what the course subject is. It's fully integrated. We know some years ago here in the city of Milwaukee, they had a gay and lesbian advisory committee, and they had this whole manual, Lori, and one of the things was that you know, to incorporate it in every classroom, every subject matter. So in the math, you use math story problems with same-sex couples, or, you know, so you cannot get away from it. They'll indoctrinate in every aspect.
Right, exactly. And already, when you have things like you allow the sexual integration of locker rooms and restrooms, that is, even if your parents say, that's not going to happen, I'm telling the school, and you'll have to go in the nurse's office or something, such a policy is actually teaching children that in order to be loving, inclusive, tolerant, you have to relinquish your privacy to opposite sex peers in private spaces. So even it's not just curricula, that's bad, it's also policies we're having in school. Also, the NEA is promoting Black Lives Matter Week of Action in pre-K through 12. I mean, the article is online and it lists them, and those are just, I'm just quoting that. That's not my paraphrase of any of these. It's deeply, deeply troubling.
It is troubling. Another one, NEA will incorporate concept of white fragility into NEA teaching, staff development, literature, and other existing communications on social, gender, LGBTQIA, and racial justice. And what is this white fragility that they refer to?
Yes, well, that might be a new concept or term to some people. And so this is my description. It's a racist, leftist term invented to mock and criticize and silence white people who disagree with the assumptions of critical race theory, or sometimes people have heard it referred to as teaching for social justice. Because, well, they'll say, you're afraid to hear these ideas. Instead of you disagree with that idea, it's you're afraid of it, and that demonstrates your white fragility. And one of the problems, you know, when Black Lives Matter and Antifa emerged on the scene in a very public way, a lot of people were saying, wow, this is what they're learning in college. I am telling people here, it doesn't start in college. It starts minimum freshman year of high school, if not middle school. And it's probably by now it's in elementary schools too. And we are, a whole generation now has been indoctrinated with the social justice theory, which is really repackaged socialism. And it also divides people up into groups according to who is the purported oppressor and who are the oppressed. And if you are white, male, and heterosexual, you are at the top of the oppression food chain. Even if you've never done anything oppressive, even if you have no feelings of superiority over any other group, by virtue of the fact that you are in possession of those traits, you are an oppressor. And they're teaching that in schools. When I worked at Deerfield High School, that's on Chicago's North Shore, I had a student once, and she was in American Studies, which is an integrated social studies and English class, and I was working on her paper, and I said, boy, you have a real negative view of America. And she said, oh, by the end of first semester of American Studies, I hated America, and I hated being an American.
Really?
Yes. So good job, teachers.
Wow. And so no doubt the rise of the socialistic attitude we're seeing today.
Well, yes, because I knew the teachers who taught that class, and that is their view. They are proponents of social justice theory. It also hyper-focuses on the flaws and failures in America, which, of course, every country has, because every country is made up of flawed humans. But it undervalues the remarkable job we've done at integrating virtually every ethnic and racial group in the world in America. We do a remarkable job, and that is not emphasized in these classrooms.
Lori Higgins is a guest today here on Crosstalk. We're discussing these organizations primarily right now. The recent reports here from the APA and now the NEA that are undermining biblical values. The sexualizing of a nation is happening right before our very eyes with these policies that they are adopting. We will give out just some more information, and then we'll be opening our phone lines. So be ready to call in quickly with your questions or comments. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. We'll be right back.
Racism is a charge often leveled in today's society. But did you know that we are all one race, of one blood? We are all part of the human race. It is imperative for children to understand what God's Word says on this subject that they know the true history of life so that we can build a truly Christian worldview and address the matter correctly. In the hardcover book, One Blood for Kids, author Ken Ham addresses this critical issue in a way that brings understanding to children. This book takes the reader on a spiritual journey presenting the real history of man, the connections between us, and how the variations of our skin tones reflect the creativity of our Creator. Fascinating facts and full-color illustrations are throughout the book. One Blood for Kids is available for a donation of $17 or two copies for a donation of $30 from VCY America. Call 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, today's program comes to you as a warning as to what is taking place. The values that you and I hold dear, not only are they sound moral values, but they're biblical values, and they're being undermined by these organizations, namely the APA, the American Psychological Association, the NEA, National Education Association, through the very measures that they are, in essence, through their policies and their initiatives, are seeking to normalize the abnormal. They are looking at the sexualizing of a nation through their practice, through their directives, through the initiatives that they are passing, and especially with the NEA, then what is heading into the classrooms as well. Now, Lori, we know that the NEA is funded by teachers, by union dues coming into them, but something that's very astounding that happened at this meeting earlier in July, they actually have opened the doors to see their coffers lined pretty handsomely.
Yes, exactly. I'm so glad you brought this up because I think it's really important, although when you read it, it sounds kind of boring. Two-thirds of the delegates voted to amend the National Teachers Union's constitution to allow non-educators to become members. So what's interesting about that is all it does is allow them to donate to the NEA's Political Action Committee. They can't vote on policy or anything else. They can't nominate candidates for office. They can't hold governance positions. And why that's important is that if you were able to join and have some effect on policy in some ways, that would incentivize conservatives joining because maybe they could change the NEA. But since all you can do is donate to the Political Action Committee that exists, all that does is strengthen the power structure that now exists. It will incentivize more liberals to join because they'll want to donate money, but it will not incentivize conservatives to donate money. So now it's a way to systemically cement the liberal control of the NEA.
Does that include corporate support?
My understanding, I don't understand. I haven't read that it limits it to. It says anyone who wants to join can, as long as they give the money.
Wow. You have said, your closing statement in this article, the NEA and its ideological allies have transformed education into indoctrination. You mean every word of that?
Absolutely. When you take topics in schools and you present resources that espouse, embody, articulate only one set of assumptions, then that is not education. It violates the most basic principles of sound pedagogy, and it transforms education into indoctrination.
Our phone number to Crosstalk today is 800-733-9829. Folks, what's your reaction to this? I mean, the section, or this rather Division 44, have you heard of that before from the American Psychological Association? And what they're promoting is consensual non-monogamy. That issue going on, we have the NEA and the issues that are being purported and passed. I mean, their agenda is laid out before us here. They're going to promote abortion. I mean, without apology, and that, folks, they have sway in the teachers' conventions and the training of teachers who then take those policies into the classroom. And all manners of whatever you want to think in your mind on LGBTQIA++++++ is going to be there in the classroom as well. And this is something that has passed in their resolutions under new business that happened just earlier this month, coming to a school near you. Our phone number to Crosstalk today is 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Lori Higgins is with us today. She's a cultural affairs writer with the Illinois Family Institute. You can read her columns on this as well as other matters that they're dealing with there at Illinois Family Institute simply by going to the website illinoisfamily.org, illinoisfamily.org. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Roy calling in from Bayside, Wisconsin. Roy, you're on the air.
One of the biggest, the America's huge expensive network of public schools are all based on a lie. Their founder was Horace Mann, a Unitarian. He did not believe in the divinity of Christ. You don't even have to believe in God to be a Unitarian. And they promised, though, that if we set up public schools that would tax the local people and have build secular schools, those schools would always reflect the values of the community because the elected local school board would be totally in charge and totally protect the values of the local community. Mm. Now we've got state and federal boards of education, federal judges interfering. The actual thing down the road, someday, I hope, we're going to have a system of vouchers in every state. The state legislature will give vouchers to parents and guardians of children, not to churches, but, and those children will be able to take that voucher and unite with others and set up any kind of school that they want that meets acceptable standards. And we'd have a lot more traditional, patriotic Christian schools once vouchers took effect.
Okay. Roy, thank you for the call. Your thoughts, Lori?
Well, one really important thing that he mentioned, that Roy mentioned, was about the values of the community. And I've had parents call me, 10 years ago I had a father call me from, it was Central or Southern Illinois, a farming community, because his first grader had come home with a picture book about homosexuality. That's how long this has been going on. And I asked if his teacher were young, and he said yes. And I said, see, that's the problem. You can't count on your teachers espousing your community values because the young teachers are coming out of schools of education that are dominated by liberals, as by the way, as the major of library science is actually dominated by liberals too. So you can't count on your schools reflecting even a conservative community values.
Hmm. Christine is calling next. You're on the air, Christine.
Yeah, I don't know if this is really fully in the vein of what you're talking about, but I'm trying to understand how it's legal for municipalities to put forth these draconian measures where people are not allowed to counsel young people out of the transgender lifestyle, yeah, out of the homosexual lifestyle. How are these measures even legal when they completely curtail or, restrict free speech rights?
Yeah, well, we'll get a brief comment. We're kind of going a little different direction, but they are related. And by the way, Racine, Wisconsin last night just passed this ordinance in order to ban so-called conversion therapy. We're talking counseling to those who have issues with wanting to deal with same-sex attraction and so forth. But there is kind of a link to all of this, isn't there, Lori?
Well, I want to make one really important point. In the legislative efforts going on around the country, no one is making a distinction between what is called conversion therapy or sexual orientation change efforts and aversion therapy. And the left likes to conflate them. Aversion therapy is, they don't do it anymore, but it's where you would have, some sort of negative physical response to something. So electrocution or, something else associated with an image of homosexuality. And so they try to portray all efforts as the same. And yes, these are anti-autonomy, anti-choice bills that shouldn't go forward. And many of them here in Illinois, it actually includes counseling for gender identity too, mm-hmm, which even therapists object to that. But, I just posted an article this week on my personal Facebook page about from a secular counselor talking about when children have been sexually molested, one of the possible consequences is to develop homoerotic attraction, same-sex feelings. And now counselors are going to have trouble counseling those people who may, and we know even from the well-known people out in the culture who've who identify as homosexual and have said they were sexually molested, that this happens. And so it's hugely problematic that we're passing those bans. And they've done it by, well, not only conflating aversion therapy and conversion therapy, but marshaling all these organizations like the APA to say this is actually harmful to people.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you, Christine. Nathan is calling from Alabama. Nathan, you're on the air.
Hi, two-part question. One, was there any dissident voices within the NEA or the APA that put anything down in writing, and what was the reaction to the dissident voices? And part two, for Lori, when does this become a self-sustaining monster that can't be stopped, the education piece? And are we at that point already, or how do we shut this thing down? Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Okay, dissenting voices, Lori?
Oh, okay. Now, I don't know about any dissident voices. So if I look at the amendment that was passed to their constitution, it was passed by two-thirds. It had to be passed by two-thirds. So that suggests that the dominance of progressives in the NEA. One thing that, in my experience in all sorts of contexts, is conservatives are cowards. So if they view if they have a dissident or dissenting view, they're afraid to express it. So I wasn't at the convention to know how they were expressed. I do know, as I mentioned earlier in our discussion, that organizations like the APA and the American Academy of Pediatrics, for instance, when they had their pro-trans affirmative protocols that they passed, there, and I know this for a fact, they did not, when they came up with the protocol, they do not submit it to the entirety of the AAP for a vote. There is no minority report. About maybe 30 people came up with it, and then another 20 or so voted on it, and then it goes out. In fact, the members of the AAP didn't even see it until it came out in a press release. So that's a general idea about how these organizations work. So when you hear that the APA supports some position, you have no idea how all the members of the APA feel about this new announced leftist policy. And about the self-sustaining nature of this, I mean, that's a great question, and it's a huge question. I'll say a couple of small, minor principles. One is that Christians have to be willing to endure persecution. The halcyon days for Christianity in America are over, and the sooner we accept that, the sooner we'll can start like acting with courage. We are going to be persecuted. People are going to hate us. We know that's going to happen. And so in aligning with their resistance to experiencing any kind of persecution, Christians have either not been paying attention or deliberately looked away because it would call for them to do something. When you experience, we have been teaching, for example, pro-homosexual plays and novels in middle schools and high schools for years, and almost no one says anything. So I would say that's, we've ignored the little things that have happened along the way, and we're continuing to ignore them now.
Yeah.
And that's why we've gotten now the juggernaut that's here. And there is no greater threat to First Amendment rights than that posed by the LGBT movement, particularly now the trans ideology.
Let's go to a caller from Minnesota. Hi, caller, you're on the air.
Okay, I am from Minnesota, and I'm so glad you're finally, this topic is getting addressed, because I am in education, and I'm on the field, and I'm a conservative, and it is getting harder and harder. I'm actually looking at the point of having to leave education because of the state that it is in right now. And a few years ago, when this was brought up in our district, we were told at the time that you have to get to the kids because their worldview is formed by the time they are age 8. So when they are looking at this agenda, you guys got to, you need to understand that. And I know I'm coming in as anonymous because I'm a little, the persecution is there if you stand up for it. So
sure.
I will get off the air, but I just want to say amen and thank you. And you also need to look into what books are being taken out of the library too, because things that are getting taken out of the library are things like showing our forefathers as good people or good Christian. And they're all, you should see what books get pulled out of the library.
Thank you. Thank you for the call, Lori.
Well, I'm very familiar with what's going on in Minnesota because I've worked with some family groups in Minnesota for some years now, so I know what she's saying is true. In fact, I know what the University of Minnesota has had some teacher training programs that got a lot of, that were experienced a lot of controversy and had to be changed.
We're going to have to take a break. We'll come back, and we've got other callers here in line as well. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Lori Higgins, our guest. Their website, IllinoisFamily.org.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. Recently, an article in Physics World revealed exactly what we've been saying in our series on brainwashed America, that those desiring to brainwash people will use those who are perceived to have credibility. They'll use those with credibility, put them up in front of a group, and use their credibility to brainwash someone into believing that which is not true. Well, recently, as I said, Physics World did an article where a group of evangelicals took a supposed expert scientist on global warming, who claims to be an evangelical, put her up in front of a bunch of Christian university students, largely many of them who did not believe in the myth of man-made global warming. Well, a study showed that simply putting her up as an expert by their conservative, so-called, Christian, so-called, leaders, increased their chances of switching their position. They went from being against man-made global warming to for it. It shows you how brainwashing can occur.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Lori Higgins with us today from the Illinois Family Institute, IllinoisFamily.org. You'll find her articles there, and gets into much more detail as to what's going on with the NEA and the APA, this Division 44. And you'll want to become better informed on these topics. We just heard anonymously from a teacher in Minnesota who is very frustrated, pressure being placed upon her, the things going on in the classroom. And Lori, just before we move on to our next call, something that really, you know, struck a nerve with me is the motivation that they have teachers get at these kids because their worldviews are impacted by age 8, and we need to do something about that.
I've heard people say that directly, say, liberals say, we have to catch them before second or third grade, before their parents are able to influence their views.
My.
I mean, the presumptuousness of it is really astonishing.
Beth is calling from West Dallas, Wisconsin. Beth, you're on the air.
Yes, I would just like to know why they're not talking about disease and violence with this new society that we're creating with anybody, anywhere, anytime, with anyone. Because the disease is going rampant and, you know, the violence besides, because there's no morals anymore to anything.
Yeah. Good point, Beth. And I know, Lori, we're seeing sexually transmitted diseases running rampant and HIV and they're just, you know, off the charts in so many cases here. And yet we're not warning children. We're not warning adults about these issues.
Well, I'm not sure in some health classes in high school, I know they do have to address sexually transmitted diseases and infections, but the connection between their affirmation of all sorts of sexual deviance and the connection between that and disease, I think the left doesn't make that connection or they don't care about that connection. And what I don't know, and I have never heard this, is I don't know if they're talking specifically about the high risks that come from sexual activity, which for just the statistics from the CDC are very troubling, and I'm not sure that they emphasize that to any students because that might make homosexual kids feel unsafe.
Yeah. Thank you, Beth. We've got Jean in Ashland County. You're on the air.
Hello. Probably about from at least 1930s, parents were told that they shouldn't bother teaching their kids because they were always teaching them the wrong thing, and if they sent them to schools thinking the wrong thing, then the teachers had to rearrange the thinking of the child.
Yeah.
So parents reluctantly stopped teaching their children and thought all they had to do was send the child to the public school and the church, and everybody else who knew so much better would teach their children. That was wrong. They relinquished their right to teach their children the right thing, and they don't teach the right thing because these generations hardly know the right thing anymore.
Jean, thank you. I'm going to have our guest comment on this aspect of surrogate parenting.
Yes, I when I first started with IFI, I would tell parents, you know, I more emphasized working to get public schools to change, and now I'm working much harder on getting churches to facilitate parents getting their kids out of school. A lot of parents can't, but we do need to get our kids out of school because they are being taught wrongly, and even if you're trying to undermine that when they for the little time that they're at home, we are not able to do it because the views they get in their government schools are the same views that the culture is perpetuating, and we need to just get our kids out. That said, we should still be involved in public schools for two reasons. Number one, whoever's there, they are our culture makers in a few years, and number two, it's a stewardship issue. Our money is being used to promote evil ideas.
Gene, thanks for your call. Let's go to Northport, Florida. Bill, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. This is a well-thought-up subject. This is something we definitely have to face.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to remind us all of a name of many, many, many years ago. His name was Nikita Khrushchev, and he was the premier of the Soviet Union. And he said, while slamming his shoe on the desk in the United Nations, we will take you over without firing a shot.
Hmm.
He never got the message that at creation, which they don't believe, it was not Adam and Steve, it was Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
But that's all I got to say.
Thank you, Bill.
I mean, it's about time we fight back.
Thank you for your call here today. And indeed, what we're seeing take place here, Lori, is the indoctrination you warned about. And without having to fire a shot, that indoctrination, that turnover is taking place.
Right. No, we are turning our children over to the government schools to be educated, and they're not being educated properly. They're introducing all sorts of topics that are not their business to teach. They're telling kids that an ideology, the leftist assumptions about sexuality, are objective and true, and they're not. They're arguable assumptions that can and should be challenged. And my argument is we cannot put our kids in a place to be taught by adults who don't recognize the difference between males and females. We can't do that. It's gone too far now, and that's why I say the church, and including retirees, by the way, that's in one of my recent articles, need to make funds available for parents to exit public schools who can't afford now to send them to existing private schools, and they can't homeschool. And churches need to make funds available, either direct money or create affordable public private schools, because we must get our kids out of public school.
We're going to try and squeeze in Steve from Salina, Kansas. You're on the air, Steve.
Yeah, Jim and Laura, you guys are talking about the educators. They want varying different viewpoints, but try bringing the Bible into a classroom or a biblical viewpoint and see how long before they call you a bigot, xenophobic, homophobic, white privileged racist. I mean, what I'm saying here is, unless they are tolerant, but they're no more tolerant than a stepped on rattlesnake.
Hmm. Thank you, Steve, for your thoughts here today. Lori, we're down to just 40 seconds here. What would you like to leave with the listeners? We've talked about two organizations here. We see the undermining of biblical values, undermining of moral family values, and the sexualizing of a nation.
Well, Steve brought up another point that's one of my bugaboos that I want people to better understand. Christians need to better understand what the separation of church and state means. It does not mean that our political decisions can't be shaped by our religious faith. It means the state can't establish a state religion. As long as we misunderstand, because the left is now saying that your free exercise of religion only pertains to what you do in church, unless we recapture a proper understanding of that, we're going to continue to lose ground on that.
Lori Higgins with us today from the Illinois Family Institute. And Lori, we so appreciate you carving out time to join us for the broadcast today.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
And folks, Illinois Family Institute, the quickest way is to go to their website at illinoisfamily.org. That's illinoisfamily.org, where you can be informed on so many varied critical issues. Our time is gone today, folks, but again, the emphasis of the need to be in prayer for our nation and our nation's leaders and those who are operating our schools and our local community governments as well. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.